Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
Now, in those disaster movies, there's always a point in which the US president is whisked off to some secret location where there's a bunker that can withstand whatever calamity is coming. But do such places actually exist? Garrett Graff is the author of Raven Rock, the story of the US government's secret plan to save itself while the rest of us die. Afternoon, Garrett.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking to us today, and congratulations on the one of the scariest headlines for a book I've read in quite some time. Tell us could you describe for us what are the continuity of government plans? Is that a fixed set of plans, or does this thing change over time?
So the continuity of government is a phrase that refers to sort of a large set of different plans that the U.S. government has built up over the last 75 years since the end of World War II that focuses on how the U.S. government would handle sort of during and after a nuclear attack or other national catastrophe on the United States. And so it's both sort of who would be in charge, you know, how the president would maintain control of the U.S. military and the nuclear arsenal, as well as the set of plans for, you know, who would take over if the U.S. president was killed, and on down through the line of succession, as well as the plans for where he would be evacuated, this sort of whole strange series of mountain bunkers and airborne command posts, as well as what would happen after an attack, sort of how the United States government would try to rebuild and restart the country after some sort of devastating attack.
Now, a lot of people would be familiar with the show Designated Survivor. In the real world example of that, if Donald Trump and Mike Pence somehow die, who gets to be president after them?
Well, so what happens after that is the Speaker of the U.S. House and then the President Pro Tem of the U.S. Senate would both become would be next in line, as well as all of the U.S. cabinet officials. So the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, and on down the list of cabinet secretaries. But it's a very complicated and interesting plan because each of those cabinet secretaries also has their whole own line of presidential succession. So what that means is that, you know, you have not just the 20 people who are in line for succession to the presidency, but each of those positions also has its own line of 15 or 20 people. So the line of sort of who could end up in charge after an attack on Washington is actually several hundred people scattered around the United States.
They're probably people who are not even aware they're in that succession line. A part of the plan, does the president have powers that can be enacted in the course of a catastrophe like this? And is it known what those powers are?
So, yes, there are a whole set of secret powers that the U.S. president can activate in the event of a national emergency. And we have some understanding of what they are in broad terms. You know, the suspension of civil liberties, the declaration of martial law, the suspension of habeas corpus, and things like that. But we don't know exactly what that plan ends up meaning. And one of the things that I sort of trace back over the course of the book is how these plans evolved during the Cold War. So we do have a sense of what those secret powers were, for instance, in the 1950s, 1960s, and 1970s. And they're truly stunning. I mean, it's basically remaking the United States as a dictatorship where there would be, private citizens who are sort of pre-designated to nationalize industries and take control of the United States in the event of a national emergency.
Now, an interesting section that jumps out of your book is that there may well be some sort of list so that in the event of these emergency powers, they'd preemptively arrest thousands, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of potential subversives. So is it reasonable to assume that such a list already exists?
Well, so this is one of those areas where we know what this list looked like in the 1950s and 1960s. You sort of have to imagine that some version of that list still exists today, of intelligence targets, potential subversives, potential terrorists, that if the president activated these emergency powers, those people could be arrested without probable cause that would be necessary during peacetime.
Mm-hmm. That's a kind of a scary thought, really. When I wonder who's on that list, but of course it's secret for a reason, I suppose. If Donald Trump is visiting, say, Japan, and something catastrophic happens in Washington, D.C., what's the plan for him then? Where do they bring him?
Well, so if he, any time that he is outside of Washington, D.C., there's a whole constellation of evacuation planes and secret facilities that are ready to receive him. Anytime the U.S. president travels overseas, there's not just Air Force One, sort of the big iconic blue and white plane, but they also bring what's known as one of the presidential doomsday planes, these converted 747s that would serve as an airborne command post in the event of a nuclear war. And that one of these planes would shadow the president overseas wherever he is. And in fact, there even is one that is kept on alert in the United States whenever the president is here domestically, you know, sitting in Washington at the White House or something. Mm. So the president would be put aboard one of these doomsday planes, these airborne command posts, and then would have basically 3 days to fly wherever he needs using air-to-air refueling before that doomsday plane would be forced to land somewhere.
Right. And say if he aims to get back to the United States, but he can go to Washington, where is set up for him, or does he have a list of places to choose from?
Well, so there are dozens of secret presidential emergency sites scattered around the United States. The one in almost any area of the country where the president might be. But the three big ones are actually the name of the book, Raven Rock, which is a mountain bunker in Pennsylvania, not far from the president's guest home or weekend home at Camp David. And then there's another bunker outside of Washington known as Mount Weather. And then there's a third bunker in Colorado that's known as NORAD, which anyone who has seen the
Stargate
Matthew Broderick movie War Games might remember.
Yeah, that's where Stargate is as well,
bunkers.
I think. Yeah. If he's in Florida, what's the closest one?
Well, so in Florida, so that's actually where the president was on 9/11. If you remember, the George W. Bush was reading to elementary school kids in Florida, and he was put aboard Air Force One, put up in the sky, and then he was taken to a military base in the Barksdale Air Force Base in Shreveport, Louisiana, right there on the Gulf Coast. And that is the home to the U.S. nuclear bomber force, and is a very secure facility there.
Wow. Now, are there similar plans for the various members of Congress?
Yes. So the congressional leadership, which is part of the presidential succession plan, I mean, the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem of the Senate, you know, might end up being president if something happens to the president and vice president themselves. So they would be evacuated to the Mount Weather bunker along with other members of the congressional leadership. And then through the Cold War, there was actually a whole special congressional bunker hidden under a luxury resort, a golf club in West Virginia that was known as the Greenbrier. And today that bunker has been retired and is open for tours. And it's sort of this fascinating place to go and tour. And you can go into these big conference rooms that were set up just like the House and the Senate so that you could have all of the members of Congress ready right there in the event of a nuclear attack on Washington.
Is it just members of Congress? Can they nominate who comes with them? Because presumably they have advisors and civil servants, etc.
Yes. So there's a level of staff who would come in the event of an evacuation like that. But what's interesting, what's sort of always been a problem with these plans is that families and spouses and children aren't included.
Oh.
And so, you know, everyone who would be evacuated in the event of an attack on Washington would have to choose, you know, do I actually leave my family behind or do I do the thing that I'm supposed to do for the country and evacuate? And one of the interesting threads that I sort of explore over the course of the book is this question of how during a lot of key moments during the Cold War, officials chose that they would, in fact, stick with their families and that they would not evacuate in the event of an attack on Washington.
Mm. And if it's something really, really catastrophic, even worse than an attack on Washington, an attack on multiple locations or some sort of natural disaster, are there contingency plans for perhaps important or who are people who are deemed to be important civilians who should be saved, for whether they're scientists or artists or whatever?
Yes. So these plans throughout the Cold War, and we sort of assume in the modern analog, do account for a number of private citizens, sort of leading industry figures, people who there was even sort of one point in the Cold War where these plans involved and included people who owned heavy machinery like bulldozers, because you would need bulldozers and heavy machinery to help clear out the rubble after a nuclear attack. And so these plans are just incredibly extensive. I mean, they involve potentially tens of thousands of Americans who would be evacuated or receive sort of special instructions or special orders in the event of a nuclear attack. And one of the other things is, you know, through the Cold War, many top corporations also maintained their own bunkers. So, you know, leading companies like AT&T or IBM, you know, would have their own set of sort of corporate bunkers hidden around the United States for their own executives.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, actually, we did an item on that not too long ago, that now it's a bit of a thing among tech millionaires or billionaires and the like to buy a bunker.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Anyone below the level of billionaire, sorry, you're absolutely goosed. Though James, one of our listeners, has just tweeted me to ask, but what if the president is the disaster? But that's an entirely different subject, I would have thought. Garrett, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's Garrett M. Graff. He's a national security expert and the author of Raven Rock, the story of the US government's secret plan to save itself while the rest of us die.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.